Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. I'm Mike Durer with you, 826. Paul Gessing on the phone. Good morning, Paul. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Mike. How are you?
Oh, doing fantastic. And I tell you what, we got a lot of things to talk about this morning. You got a hard stop. I got to kick you out of here at 9 o'clock. So let's get into it. Judge puts MLG's five-day school week on hold. Way to go, Judge.
Yeah, this has been quite the saga here. Of course, we've been talking about the governor's strong desire to force all school districts in the state to adopt the five-day school week, regardless of time spent in the classroom. That's not an issue. That's settled under state law, but the governor seems to really have a desire to force even some of these school districts in rural New Mexico where, you know, they have hours spent commuting each way to school, and force them into the same box as to have, say, Albuquerque Public Schools or some other urban district. We saw recently that 53 of the districts around the state had sued to stop this regulation from being imposed, and a judge has now issued essentially a stay or an order that the regulation not be implemented, the five-day-a-week rule. So what does that mean? Well, nothing and a lot. On one hand, it just means that at some point they'll get around to making the decision. We, of course, know that here we are in May of 2024. So this school year, it was going to be over regardless. This is all about next school year and whether we go 4 day or 5 day. And I don't know. That's going to depend on how quickly the judicial system acts with regard to this particular policy. I would be pretty surprised if we have an answer in time for this coming fall. But you never know where the judiciary will go with it, what appeals will look like. But I think it does indicate that the judge sees this as a very credible lawsuit and something that is going to require serious consideration. That's a good thing because oftentimes in a Democrat state like this, we're going to see just a rubber stamp effect where they go ahead, say whatever the governor says, that's good. And I think we all want to see something that's a little more deeply thought out than that.
Well, absolutely. And that decision needs to be left up to the individual school districts as long as they meet the requirements. But don't change the requirements mid-game.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what they were going to do that. For these last few weeks of the year, this is going to be for moving forward regardless.
Right.
So we'll see what all shakes out. And seems like one of the top issues right now that really are causing controversy in New Mexico, especially with regard to education.
No, absolutely. Well, let's move to the next one. I love this one because, man, this describes New Mexico government. New Mexico spends million on solar projects, not knowing how much power it will get.
Yeah, it is amazing. And, we're in this stage with regard to so-called green energy right now where it doesn't really matter what is being done. There's just this philosophy among the governor and the legislature that green is good, or at least what they think is green, so-called renewables. Everything is worth spending money on. There's very little in the way of prioritization, and we're just going to pour money into it. And The Center Square is a news outlet that looks at different things that have been oftentimes passed over by mainstream media outlets in the states and at the state level. And I was asked to provide comment for a story by the Center Square. And yeah, it's kind of shocking that the state of New Mexico would be embarking on spending about $6 million on various solar projects without knowing what amounts of energy is going to be produced and knowing how many jobs and what kind of economic development is going to happen. Of course, we know if you listen to this show enough, you know that government taking our money out of our pockets and handing it to a private business is never the very best option when it comes to creating jobs and economic development. But it's only going to be worse when it's these politically favored projects and when they don't do any due diligence to figure out exactly how much energy or how many jobs and economic development we're going to produce here. So this one's at errorsofenchantment.com, but you can read more about the Center Square at thecentersquare.com. That's where they do their reporting. And this one just happens to be the most recent about New Mexico.
Absolutely. And you said something there, you know, taking taxpayer dollars and giving it to private companies, as we discussed challenges UPS and FedEx are having with adopting EVs. But the New Mexico Environment Department is spending just under $500,000 of our taxpayers' money to buy UPS, a private company, clean vehicles.
Yeah, and this one's a real head-scratcher because on one hand, and we might have discussed this last week, the companies like UPS and FedEx are struggling to implement electric vehicles, even though as a kind of broad measure, the companies would be relatively easily able to adopt EVs because the delivery trucks do a lot of stopping and going, which is easy for electric vehicles. They also go back to the same location every night where they can be charged up and ready to go for the next day. But the state of New Mexico, using some federal dollars, has offered a grant or is giving a grant over to UPS for over $473,000 to replace 16 old delivery vehicles. Now, these are compressed natural gas vehicles, but our broader point is that the state of New Mexico should not be involved at all in putting money in the hands of major international corporations in order to purchase vehicles of any kind. And that's just nuts to me that that would be something that government would want to do or see a benefit from doing. But of course, we're still in this mode where if it's green, then it's good. And even though it's not, we're not talking about EVs that they're giving to UPS, they are giving UPS 16 vehicles and $473,000 for those vehicles.
And those vehicles, did you say, are liquid natural gas?
Compressed natural gas.
Okay. Now, wait a minute here. Now, they're all about EVs. Are they softening now and going with fossil fuels? Because compressed natural gas is natural gas.
I think the issue is that they simply do not have the vehicles available. You cannot find the electrified vehicles for what UPS is trying to do. There's been so much turnover in that industry and also problems with the manufacturing, generally speaking, with EVs, let alone a kind of more specialized type of electric vehicle there.
Yeah.
In terms of these delivery vehicles.
All right. Well, let's move to the next one. Rebecca Dow with OAK or Oak NM op-ed in Journal and other papers. What's this one about? Of course, I know she's a big education person.
Yeah, well, Rebecca Dow works with the Rio Grande Foundation, promoting and advocating for and organizing for education reform, school choice. We had talked recently about this federal report from the U.S. about are not getting hit by the state of New Mexico and the education system. And it was a wide-ranging report that had to do with accountability measures for transparency and accountability for the finances, a lot of different things that New Mexico was just not getting done. And so Rebecca, in her work for, it's called Opportunities for All Kids, OAK New Mexico, that project that she runs, she wrote this piece that appeared across the state showing that, or talking about how this latest report should encourage policymakers to education, including choice and empowering parents to make the decisions that work for them when it comes to their education system. And unfortunately, we're a long way. Simply politically, the legislature is dominated by unions, and they are not going to embrace school choice because it reduces the power of that political interest group. But we don't get where we want to go overnight. We have to continue to educate and advocate for this kind of policy to be implemented. And unfortunately, we're a long way off from that, but we're going to keep trying. And Rebecca highlighted this most recent data, this most recent report, as a another reason why we should adopt school choice.
There you go. All right, that sounds great. Well, the next item is being a U.S. senator is more than bringing home pork.
Yeah. Well, even though there's no primary in the U.S. Senate race that is being run here in New Mexico between Martin Heinrich and Nella Domenici. Of course, she's the daughter of Pete Domenici. And by the way, it would be Pete Domenici's birthday today. So this may be one of the reasons why we have this little battle that appeared in the Albuquerque Journal and probably some other papers across the state where there were dueling op-eds about the legacy of Pete Domenici. And Representative Gail Chasey of Albuquerque wrote one article. Chasey, if you're not aware, is recently retired. Technically, she's still a legislator, so she'll be back in July, but she's announced her retirement, not running again. She's one of the uber progressives coming out of Albuquerque. And she wrote an article in which she really tried to conflate Martin Heinrich, the U.S. senator, the senior senator, with Pete Domenici, and talk about how Heinrich had brought all of this money home to New Mexico and how this was reminiscent of Pete Domenici's career and his record of bringing home the bacon. And I think that is a very low-minded approach to understanding what a U.S. senator is all about. Certainly, Domenici did bring home the bacon. Of course, New Mexico has long been one of the poorest states in the country. Right now, with all the oil and gas money, we could and should be improving on those metrics, but are not. And I wrote that it's more than just about bringing home the bacon to be a U.S. senator. And Nella Domenici would provide balance in New Mexico's congressional delegation. She would also advocate for New Mexicans, which I don't really believe Martin Heinrich does. I think he's much more focused on his so-called green energy goals and radical environmental goals And of course, New Mexico is the second biggest state for oil production. It's a state that really relies on traditional energy sources, not just for for our day-to-day lives, but of course the revenue that it provides, the jobs that those industries provide for New Mexicans. So I also note that, and you're probably aware, Joe Manchin, who he is. He is the Democrat senator from West Virginia who is retiring. He's also chair of the Senate Energy Committee, which is a very powerful, committee. To be the head of a Senate committee there in Washington, you have a great deal of influence over the policies that come out of Washington. Well, Joe Manchin, is a Democrat, but he actually cares about energy issues, whereas Martin Heinrich would be the next in line to be chair of this committee. And you cannot come up with a more polar opposite approach to energy issues than that between Martin Heinrich and Joe Manchin. So if Heinrich does get reelected, if the Democrats continue to control the U.S. Senate, you can look for a lot of anti-energy policies coming through the U.S. Senate Energy Committee, and Martin Heinrich will be the cause of a lot of that. So not only do we expect Heinrich to run for governor in 2 years after that, although, he might find Washington a little more intriguing once he's the chair of a more powerful committee that deals with the issues that he really cares about. But you never know. So Heinrich is definitely on the very left side of the political situation when it comes to energy issues. And Nella Domenici is pro-energy, and she's going to be supporting New Mexico's economy in a way that Martin Heinrich simply is unwilling to, or actually is opposed to traditional energy.
Wow. I'm a personal friend with another senator from Kansas who has explicit feelings towards Martin Heinrich, and they're not good, and I'll tell you about that off the air sometime. But anyway, oh boy. Well, New Mexico is currently under two public health emergencies. Really?
Yeah.
Anybody know it?
No, and that's one of the reasons that we I wanted to highlight this issue, because we've been under these health emergencies as a state for so long that it really is lost on most people what is going on in the state regarding these emergencies. And of course, we know that we were under a COVID emergency until March 31st of last year, of 2023. So that one finally expired, and I think the governor decided that she really liked being in an emergency, and I guess she could someday look back and say, I was governor of New Mexico during all of these horrible emergencies, and I sailed the ship like a captain through a storm, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so that's the two emergencies are, one has to deal with gun violence. And of course, we know that that's her preferred way to talk about violence and crime. And of course, their inability and unwillingness to address crime is to blame it on the gun. So one is relating to so-called gun violence, and the other deals with drug abuse. So I bet you didn't know that we were under those two emergencies, and I bet your listeners didn't either, but they expire in 10 days on May 17th. But as we saw during COVID, the governor has a distinct tendency to extend emergencies as she deems necessary or just kind of really wants to do. So, you can read more about it at heirsofenchantment.com. But, most people are probably unaware that we're under any emergency whatsoever. Certainly, the two emergencies and what they deal with, I think you could count on a few hands the number of people outside of the Lujan Grisham administration that are aware of these public health orders, which is kind of what we're, you know, what we're saying is that, you know, if we're really going to declare these emergencies, we should be in an emergency and not just kind of evergreen keep these public health orders in place.
But you notice there's not a crime and theft emergency, and there's not a drunk driving emergency by this governor.
No, not at all.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. Well, if we got a, we got a few minutes here. Palestinian protests, I kind of figured, funded by Gates, Rockefeller, Soros, and Pritzker. Well, you know, there's nothing like having a country funded by a bunch of idiots to promote terrorism inside our country. I just love these guys.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is obviously a who's who of some of the biggest kind of liberal donors to political causes in the entire country. Gates, Rockefeller, Soros, and Pritzker. I'll explain a little bit about who these folks are in a second, but the magazine called Politico, or it's a political magazine out of Washington, D.C. This was yesterday. The story came to the forefront, highlighting that the anti-Israel, pro-Gaza, pro-Hamas, however you want to phrase it, protesters are being funded by these four entities. Really, the latter three. Gates has jumped out of the funding, but they were cited as one of the organizations that was involved. Of course, Rockefeller, yes, this is the sorry legacy of the way foundations work. John D. Rockefeller, Standard Oil, et cetera, one of the greatest capitalists this country has ever seen from the early part of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
His money, of course, because donor intent and the understanding of how groups get when they get a hold of resources like this, they start to embrace government and fake political causes. So Rockefeller Foundation, we know who George Soros is. Pritzker, it might be one that's a little less known by people. That is the heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune. And if you know politics, currently J.B. Pritzker is the governor of Illinois, but this is a left-wing family, left-wing foundation. If you really know politics, you may be aware that I believe her name was Penny Pritzker. Another member of this family out of Illinois was, I want to say, Commerce Secretary during the Obama administration. So very political family, very pro, you know, Democrat, as, you know, to the extent that the protesters have been involved in politics, you can bet their politics are all you know, kind of starting from the far left of the Democratic Party and going further left from there. But they're not doing, this is not some organic movement. These are funded efforts. The ironic thing is that these people and entities are also some of the biggest funders of Joe Biden and his political aspirations campaigns. So the question I think that's being bandied about here relating to this is, are these people just operating, you know, the right hand does not know what the left hand is doing because there's so much money involved, and they're undermining, I think it's safe to say, these protests are undermining Joe Biden's political future while encouraging these protests and funding these protests, or is there a more kind of developed strategy here where these people and entities don't care about Joe Biden's future and winning a re-election, and they're just sowing chaos and promoting a left-wing cause while the cause is front and center, because obviously the Israel-Palestinian situation has been percolating and bubbling on the stove, so to speak, since you know, long before I was a kid. This is an issue that goes back a very long way. In the past, the Democratic Party was pretty much in lockstep with Republicans as being supportive of Israel. That has certainly shifted in recent years. You've got the far left AOCs of the world who are explicitly anti-Israel, pro-Palestine, and now Biden is very much waffling in the middle. And it's just interesting to see all of these different groups and interests duking it out on the left. You know, pretty much the entire right side of the political spectrum is unified behind Israel. There are nuances there, but it's really the left that is kind of fighting amongst themselves. And we know from past events that that kind of thing tends to not work very well in election politics, because some group or some number of those different folks will decide that they don't want to play ball and they'll stay home come election day. And I should note, of course, I'm too young for this. Mike, you may have some distant memories of it, but the Democratic National Convention happens to be held this year in Chicago.
Oh boy!
Of course, if you have studied your history book, you know that Chicago was the site of one of the most kind of violent, controversial, mm-hmm. and problematic conventions in the history of this country. Back in 1968, also the Democratic National Convention that year. You know, the biggest difference, at least as we kind of move towards August, and that's when it'll be held, is that, you know, it was a Mayor Daley, a Democrat, machine boss, kind of all the corruption of Chicago politics rolled into one, you know, individual there. Now we have Brandon Johnson, I believe is his name, and he is very much, I think, of the corrupt nature of Chicago politics, but very much somebody who might use the police to support the Palestinian protesters and take a very hands-off approach, which could result in another form of chaos unfurling there in Chicago in August. So, I told a group of people I talked to last night, you don't have enough popcorn in this world to fuel what I'm going to be doing during the Democratic election, because it is going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, if it's anything like what we saw on TV in 1968, this could be very interesting, and it's not going to help the Democrat Party at all.
No, and yeah, it's again, fascinating that some of the richest men, richest people in the world are funding kind of both different groups there. And certainly George Soros has been very notable for a very long time. And he may just be fueling chaos. He almost seems to be like Heath Ledger as the Joker from The Dark Knight, where
yeah.
it's not about choosing a side, it's just about enjoying the chaos.
Yeah.
If George Soros seems to be interested in one thing or another, it's chaos. So,
well, Gates is very anti-people, and Soros is very anti-American. I mean, he professes
yeah.
it. So that's what that is there. Well, the Libertarian Party to host Trump at their convention. Wow!
Yeah, pretty interesting. And certainly, if you go online and you follow Libertarian Party political types, which they do exist for folks who are not maybe in the same political world I am, you definitely have some people who are very engaged with Libertarian politics. Of course, most recently, 2016 and 2012, so not this past cycle. The Libertarians were really kind of just a non-entity in 2020. But in 2016, Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, ran. And certainly in New Mexico, he made an impact. He had double-digit numbers in the land of enchantment in the governor's race in 2016. And then in 2012, he also was the Libertarian nominee and had what I would call a decent showing in that race. So the Libertarians, as a philosophy, have certainly plenty of adherents. As a party, much fewer. But it is interesting that you know, Trump tends to be somebody who is associated with kind of shrinking the tent and angering people who are outside of his political base. And, you know, that's why we have such high voter turnout in sort of Trump world where we're living in. Trump really polarizes people. He gets out the Republicans and the working classes, but the suburban soccer moms and the left, they get out in equally big numbers. But Trump is kind of reaching a hand outside the tent to the Libertarian Party and is going to speak at their convention. And you know, I don't know if this will bear fruit come November, but it is an interesting thing to see President Trump explicitly reaching out and trying to gain the Libertarian vote. And, you know, I've said it before, Trump has a relatively decent record when it comes to Libertarian issues, certainly compared to, say, the Mitt Romney, John McCain, George W. Bush era of the Republican Party. Trump can point to a relatively moderate foreign policy, no wars, etc. But the thing that I think, and this is a Libertarian issue, but I think this is, if I was in the room right now with Donald J. Trump, I would say, you got to control spending. You got to keep a lid on spending. You got to shrink the size of government. Winning the battle against the swamp requires you to reduce funding for the swamp. And if you do that, you can have a real successful second term. And that would be good for the country because we've been in a period of uncontrolled growth of federal power, federal spending, and it really needs to be an issue that's taken seriously. So we'll see if that's an upshot out of this or what pledges he might make to try to bring some Libertarian Party members and Libertarian-style voters to his side for the election day. So just a something to watch.
It's going to be real interesting, and sounds like the Libertarians want everything they want. Well, we might have to save these last few items for the next time.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I appreciate it, and great chatting. Yeah, we packed a lot in there, but got a lot done.
Yeah, absolutely. All good stuff. Well, Paul, I tell you what, have yourself a fantastic day up there, and go Domenici. And that's one Democrat I can get behind, really, to be truthful about it and stuff. So, but we'll just see how that all pans out. Have yourself a fantastic week. I know you got to get going somewhere, so safe travels, and we'll talk to you next time, okay?
All right. Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Thank you.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.